Vous écoutez Art District. Et tout de suite, c'est Jazz Chronicles, animé par Michael Pelias, en direct de New York.
This is Jazz Chronicles, live from New York City, with your host, Michael Pelias. In the background, and how we open the show, is the great piece Money Jungle, from the album Money Jungle, done in 1962, featuring, on piano, the great Edward Kennedy, Duke Ellington, and Max Roach on drums, and the opening exceptional jazz bassist, Charlie Mingus, who kind of sets the stage. Today's program will involve the work of Duke Ellington, try to trace it retrospectively from this 1962 piece, also with some pieces from the 1956 Newport Jazz Festival, which really made Duke Ellington an international star in the jazz world and a household name, going all the way back to his early days in Harlem, from the Cotton Club forward. So we should have a great time listening to the work of Ellington with a little bit of commentary in the background. I want to point out that you can imagine Ellington in between these two giants, Mingus and Roach, in 1962 on this Money Jungle piece. To me, it's Ellington's tribute to Thelonious Monk, and at the same time saying, I can do Monk just as Monk does Monk. And it's a kind of interesting moment that he would go with two extremely avant-garde and militant black musicians, such as Roach As we know, the great Peace Speak brothers speak, and of course Mingus's many, many tales of Faubus being one, many, many civil rights and black freedom suites that were done during this period up until the late 60s. So, you know, Ellington finds himself at this point with the best of what we could call avant-garde jazz and two giants of percussion, Roach and, of course, Mingus. I want to back up just a little bit. Edward Kennedy Duke Ellington was born in Washington, D.C. in 1899. He was raised in a upper-middle-class black family. His mother wanted him to have the best of social skills, so she would make him hang out with elegant aristocratic ladies in D.C. circles so he could learn good manners, good mannerisms, and distinct speech patterns. And as those of you that know Ellington can remember, he was extremely articulate, almost spoke like a musical instrument, perfect cadence, and was a great, great orator, if you will, as well as being one of the exceptional pianists, composers, arrangers, and orchestral leaders of the 20th century. So he got the name Duke because he spoke like a duke. He spoke like an aristocrat, a member of the aristocracy, and certainly was one of the leaders of jazz aristocracy. And for those of you that are in New York, you can certainly visit, both online and in person, the Duke Ellington Society, which is located here in New York City, if you have an interest. Today, as I mentioned before, we're going to do some kind of retrospective work on an Ellington. I want to just point out that it's hard to, you know, not only think of Ellington as a pivotal figure in the history of jazz. Certainly, the piece we're going to listen to next in 1942, the Sea Jam Blues, was a kind of pivotal piece for the big band, and kind of set up a kind of new code for jazz post-World War II. And but also, Ellington in some ways was beyond categorization, beyond category. He was, as I mentioned before, simultaneously in his career, a pianist, a composer, an orchestral leader, with really over 1,000 compositions, including many, many with collaborators. But his greatest collaborator, and known well, is Billy Strayhorn, his good friend. And they began their association in 1929. Some of you will probably know Strayhorn composed the piece Take the A-Train, which we will not listen to today because it's kind of domesticated Ellington and, you know, has gone through so many levels of interpretation, and we can do that on a later show. But anyway, Strayhorn wrote Take the A-Train on the way up to Duke Ellington's famous apartment on 125th Street. So Take the A-Train with a stop in Harlem at 125th Street was really Strayhorn's masterpiece for Ellington and the popularization of that. But Strayhorn also was very well known for Lush Life, of which Ellington, you know, played and devoted some orchestral work to as well. We're gonna go back, like I said. We wanna talk a little bit more about his movement in D.C. This will be an interesting anecdote, is that he sold peanuts at the Washington Senators baseball games. This was one of his early jobs. He also was an accomplished artist in high school. After beginning piano at 7 years old, he really took to painting and the arts and received a scholarship to the New York Brooklyn Institute, Pratt Institute, here in the neighborhood of Fort Greene, Brooklyn, which has become a center for great restaurants and some jazz clubs, including Sister's Place on Nostrum Avenue, worth checking out if ever in New York City. So Ellington did eventually move to New York and to Brooklyn in 1923 and started playing with the sextet. And then he migrated up to the Cotton Club. The Cotton Club, of course, being the famous club in Harlem, nothing but jazz, popular swing era music, etc. And Ellington at the Clotten Club was very well known. He went from a sextet all the way up to a small orchestral band there, and built his reputation as a national figure. I don't think he had come of age or was really at that point the real Duke Ellington, as I use that term, the real, meaning that he had really developed into another level of interpretation of the piano and in terms of composition. But he became very well known and hung around many, many musicians we're going to hear now who were in Harlem during the period. The next piece I want to make a transition to, so you can have this, understanding of his movement, is in 1942, about 15 years after he had been, actively at the Cotton Club, is the famous Sea Jam Blues. And I'm just going to give you some of the personnel on this piece, all of whom were great in their own right. Barney Bigard on clarinet, who played with Louis Armstrong. Sidney Greer on drums. Ray Nance on the violin, Jim Nance on the trumpet, Ben Webster, the great saxophonist, is in this piece, and Rex Stewart on the trumpet. So we're going to listen to the Sea Jam Blues next, and then we'll be back with a little bit of an interpretation of that piece, and then go back a little bit to the Cotton Club area at a time with Ellington, with a Creole love call. But first, Sea Jam Blues, to give you an idea of the pivotal period of Duke Ellington. This was the Sea Jam Blues, 1942, and you can hear Ellington developing his real signature style on the piano here. I particularly like, and I think you should attune yourself to this, is the great Ray Nance on the violin, how much that really plays into this jam blues. This was 1 year after Take the A-Train was done, the C Jam Blues, and just to give you a situatedness about this. Again, it's pre-end of the World War II period, but something that began to, again, develop Ellington's reputation as possible for swing music in film. You know, later, of course, if you know the piece, it doesn't mean a thing if it ain't got no swing. Doodop, ba-doodop, doodop. Anyway, I'm not going to scat today, but anyway, I think this is a very, very important and very, very important piece in the Ellington repertoire. What I'd like to do here is kind of do something formally to move forward to 1956 to the Newport Jazz Festival, to the diminuendo in blue and crescendo in blue, to see how this plays out at a much more sophisticated level, and hopefully you can attune your ears to hearing this, how Paul Gonzalez, Ray Nance is present in this piece, but it's really this great solo by Paul Gonzalez after Ellington sets it up. So we're going to listen to about 3 or 4 minutes of the famous piece that launched thousands of chairs at the Newport Jazz Festival in 1956 that really put Duke Ellington on the match. Because I think this is going to, again, show a direct correlation between the C Jam Blues and, of course, the diminuendo in blue and crescendo in blue. So we're going to go to that. Of course, the famous solo by Paul Gonzalez. And I want to emphasize when you listen to this, once again, how good Ellington can make his other musicians sound. You know, this is one of his real geniuses, in my opinion, as a orchestral leader. You know, and as an arranger, he really makes the musicians, gets the most out of them. Paul Gonzalez was a great sax player. However, he's greater when he's with Ellington in the orchestra, in my view. And, you know, you can draw your own conclusions about this. But to my mind, Paul Gonzalez with Duke Ellington is one of the best of the best. Okay, so we'll go to the diminuendo and crescendo in blue, 1956 Newport Jazz Festival. Thank you. So that's the great, famous 1956 Newport Jazz Festival rendition of Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue with the Duke Ellington Orchestra featuring Paul Gonzalez. You can hear part of the Sea Jam Blues, how well Ellington's piano begins this. We started about 3 minutes into it. Gonzalez, by the way, continues for about another 7-8 minutes on the sax, bringing the crowd to a complete uproar. So please listen to the entire piece. We don't have the time to play the entire piece, which is about 17 minutes. But the idea here, of course, is to look at this and to hear, you know, Ellington's 1942 Sea Jam Blues playing forward into a much more sophisticated level in 56. In 1956, the great Diminuendo in Blue and Crescendo in Blue was really the revival of his career. He had been pretty much not down and out, but not in the forefront as he was before. This was the period of the early, you know, new wave, the Clifford Browns, the Max Roaches, who we ended up playing with in 62, you know, of course, Charlie Parker and the beginning of bebop, you know, and the early Miles Davis. So Ellington was not, you know, considered to be in the foreground, although was always there. This became a moment, again, of the revival of his career. Just to mention, too, that Ellington received a Pulitzer Prize for his ability in music in 1999 and was honored many, many times in Washington, D.C. So this is a man who became a national treasure, you know, in terms of, again, in the line of, in my view, of Charles Ives, the composer, in the line of Aaron Copland, in the line of course, you know, much more sophisticated than the great Count Basie and the Kansas City sound. So Ellington gave us a different level, if you will, in the history of jazz. We're going to go back to Harlem. I would like you to hear a little bit of his earlier work. We're going to go back to 1927 with the Creole Love Call. I wanted you to hear Adelaide Hall. Ellington always had these wonderful female vocalists with him. Another one I recommend, we're not going to play her tonight, is Betty Roche. But we're going to hear Adelaide Hall, part of the Creole Love Call. This was a 1927 piece that was used in Harlem, you know, as a kind of centerpiece at the Cottom Club. So please listen to this, and then we'll come back, and I want to play the Black and Tan of 1928 for you to get an idea of, you know, Ellington's range, also with religious music and his relationship to the Afro-American community. So first, the Creole Love Call. That's the great Adelaide Hall singing Creole Love Song from 1927. You can imagine those Harlem nights. I recommend the work of the great Chester Himes, the novelist to really get a captured view of this, you know, period in American history that is so rich, the Harlem Renaissance and beyond. And Adelaide Hall was one of the primary figures of this, with Betty Roche and some other, you know, female vocalists, and of course the Ellington Orchestra once again in Harlem. Just to mention also, Ellington composed for several films, but one that's kind of not looked at anymore, done by the great director Nicholas Ray, The Beggar's Holiday, 1946, which is interesting, the date, 1 year after World War II, we have a film called Beggar's Holiday, in which, you know, the obviously the soldiers returning don't have, you know, brother, can you spare a dime mentality. And so this is another interesting moment in Ellington's career, how much of cinema both him and the other great of the period, Louis Armstrong, had. By the way, as you know, these two lives cross each other very actively. They're born almost the same time. Armstrong dies 3 years before Ellington's passing and was born a couple of years later. I want to move on 1 year later, from 1927, and also a little further into this program with Ellington's relation to the Afro-American community. I want to play something from The Black and Tan, which was what he composed in 1928 as a kind of, you know, celebration, if you will, of the spiritual music and the spiritual, you know, soul, if you will, of the Afro-American community. Very, very interesting moment in the 1920s, the late 1920s. So we're gonna hear just a short rendition from that, and then move forward to more of the contemporary work of Ellington, and speak to some of the stuff he does around the time of Money Jungle and afterwards. So The Black and Tan. So, this is from the 1928 Black and Tan Fantasy. You can hear the Creole love call kind of crying through the instruments now. Adelaide Hall's voice kind of instrumentalized very beautifully in the background here. This again was a great piece of the period, played at the Cotton Club often, and also incorporated some of Ellington's, take on African American culture, its liveliness, its spirit, its openness, its incredible ability to have both the use of classical music alongside of dance music together. Towards the end of the great period known as the Harlem Renaissance. So what I'd like to do now, for reasons of time, but we can always pick up with this on another program later, I would like to move forward to Ellington, back to the Money Jungle period. I'm going to play something else from the great album Money Jungle called Blues in Orbit. I want people again to understand that Ellington not only was a swing artist, not only again a great orchestral, a leader and performer, composer, etc., but he could play the bebop. He could actually, play Monk on the piano. He was very interested in everything that was going on. Just an incredibly talented individual whose range was probably as great as any jazz musician during the 20th century. And many, many, studies should be devoted to him at this point. He never took the activist political positions like the Sheps, or later, to speak of the, early Cecil Taylor, some of the people around the Chicago group of Lester Bowie and David Murray, the free jazz moments. But Ellington was very aware of this and in some ways very subtly incorporated it into his music. Also, his understanding of the blues, in my view, is also the greatest of the understandings of the major jazz musicians. He really knew how to incorporate this into an orchestral sound or into everything from a trio even further into, a big band sound. So we're going to listen to Blues in Orbit, and then we're going to go to a couple of his movie pieces and end there for today. So let's hear Blues in Orbit and listen again carefully to this incredible influence of the old blues on Ellington, but also done in such an avant-garde style of 1962. Thank you. Blues in Orbit. If you know Sun Ra, you can't tell the difference between Ellington in this early 60s and Sun Ra in his early phase in the 70s. And Ellington didn't have synthesizers. Pretty amazing and certainly worthy of consideration. All right, so I want to just mention a few things about Ellington going forward after this period. I just want to, some of the things that he did in his middle 60s till his death. In 1976, he did the New Orleans Suite. Before that, the Far East Suite. The Afro-Eurasian Eclipse, 1971. And he also recorded an album with Frank Sinatra, Francis, and Edward Kay, it was called, in 1967, my apologies. So anyway, another thing about Ellington, the Steinway piano, when he played the Sacred Concerts, the premiere he did in September of 65, is now, the Steinway piano sits in the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. And always Ellington conducted the orchestra from the piano. He always played the keyboard parts when the Sacred Concerts were performed. And as you know from all these orchestrations that you heard tonight, it's always from the piano that these things emerge, that they find their originative moment, if you will. We're going to end with his venture into film. He did many, many soundtracks. We're going to end with Anatomy of a Murder, the piece from that. I hope people listen to Ellington. It's worth as much as Louis Armstrong to me. These are the two giants, two pillars, the piano and the horn of 20th century jazz. And I hope you've, gotten something out of this program and a broader view here. I want to say that Ellington also performed with the great John Coltrane with Impulse. He made records with Louis Armstrong as well. And, of course, we opened with Money Jungle with Mingus and Roach. So thank you very much. This is Michael Pelias for Jazz Chronicles from New York City, trying to keep the tradition of jazz alive, especially the great pillars of Armstrong and Ellington. In the future, we'll build off of these two instruments into more modern and contemporary people, but it's good to have the background. So we're going to close with Anatomy of a Murder, Ellington's score for the film of that name, one of the great films of all time. Thank you for listening. We look forward to hearing again from you and speaking to you. Good night.
Grâce à Michael Pelias en direct de New York, vous venez d'avoir un petit aperçu du jazz new-yorkais et c'était bien sympathique. C'était donc Jazz Chronicles avec Michael Pelias. Je vous invite maintenant à découvrir la suite de nos programmes sur Art District.